for there were few, indeed none, but not to deplore the loss of someone dear to them from the dangerous rock which lay in the very track of all the vessels entering the Firth of Tay. Cleis had formed a plan of fixing a bell to the rock, which could be so arranged that the slightest breath of wind would cause the hammer of it to sound, and thus, by its tolling, warn the mariner of his danger. They loved with an intensity which it would be impossible to portray. Yet they hardly exchanged a word. Their eyes spoke, but nothing more. Cleis shuddered and made no reply. Onward went the vessel, impelled by the sea and wind. One moment raised aloft and towering over the surge, at another deep in the hollow trough. Cleis still held his Katarina in his arms when a sudden shock threw them onto the deck. The crashing of the timbers, the pouring of the waves over the stern, the heeling and settling of the vessel were but the work of a few seconds. One more furious shock, she separates, falls on her beam ends, and the raging seas swept over her. Swept over her. Swept over her. And when all is smooth and calm, when at the ebbing tide the wave but gently kisses the rock, then by the light of the silver moon, the occupants of the vessels which sail from the Firth of Tay have often beheld the ghostly form of the beautiful Katarina, waving her scarf as a signal that they should approach and take her off the rock on which she is seated. She mourns and weeps as the wary mariners, with their eyes fixed on her and with folded arms, pursue their course in silence and in dread.